You are listening to IdgitCast. This week, Season 3, Episode 4, Sin City. In a town given over to vices, the boys find themselves doing stuff and talking a lot.
Yes.
And then some more talking. And then there was a little more talking.
And also they talked.
So let's hit the theme music and get into this. Theme music now! Welcome back to IdgitCast. I am one of your newbies, Paul Mackey, and I have with me a second newbie right here in the room, my lovely wife Darcy.
Hi, I'm eating salad.
And down in New Orleans, we have a third newbie, Yvette.
Hey, y'all.
And in Texas, we don't have... John's feeling a little under the weather. I hope he's going to feel better. He'll hopefully be feeling better by the time this gets released in 3 or 4 weeks, but... So, Sin City, we decided to go ahead and forge ahead because we didn't necessarily feel like postponing for this episode. Opinion spoilers.
Yeah, I feel like we can discuss this one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're missing any subtleties or anything.
I found a subtlety or two to bring up, but I'm just going to go right on through this thing here. I made my own summary this week. Don't have to rely on someone else. And here we go. So, in a church, a nun is spooked by a presence, but it turns out just to be the priest. Nothing to worry about that priest.
These people probably don't mean anything to
the story. No.
As he offers to walk her to her car, a man, Andy, appears. Andy says that God either can't or won't help them. Then he produces a gun and kills himself.
I liked the nun's habit. I like the one with the big visor on it. That's
you
awesome.
Like those big ones?
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what the different kinds of habits signify.
I don't either, but that one I liked.
Possibly the customer didn't know either.
Who knows? Maybe it was just on cheap at rental that week.
Could be. Central casting? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I felt like this episode looked kind of weird. Like there was something like off with the cinematography or something.
Good point, yeah.
I noticed there were a lot of shots in mirrors. Tons and tons of shots in mirrors.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that was just, hey, we're being creative, we're going to shoot a bunch in mirrors, or whether they have some kind of subtext that we didn't catch.
Hmm.
Yeah, there must be something, like, it must have had a reason for it, but it felt, like, weird to look at.
Yes. Bobby works on disassembly of the Colt, and I think Dean is working on making ammo, by the look of it. Well, apparently Sam is watching news for omens. There's a suicide in a church, and a hobby shop massacre, potential signs in Elizabethtown, Ohio, a rundown former factory town. So they go to check it out. Leaving Bobby to work on the Colt alone. Ohio seems to be awfully close to South Dakota, but I'll let that go.
Well, you know.
Oh, you know how they're right there next to each other.
Well, uh-huh. You know, it's all in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it is all in the middle somewhere.
Right. The boys start at the church, working the insurance investigator's angle, and it turns out that Andy had stopped attending services about 2 months back. And the town, the whole town, had changed about then, too, and not for the better. The father... The priest also knew the hobby store shooter, and I feel a need to make a shout-out to Sue and Emily over at Yes Mother on quadruplez.com, our friends, because the hobby store shooter's name is Tony Perkins.
Friends of the show, Tony Perkins.
Anthony Perkins. Norman Bates.
Yes.
Perkins also underwent a sudden change. Turns out it was about 2 months back. And after they finish, Sam and Dean make note that the Devil's Gate in Wyoming was opened 2 months back. At the motel, which finally is a room that looks as low rent as you think you might expect, they run...
Yeah, that was actually pretty good set design.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that
mirrors
hotel room
on
a
the
lot.
Ceiling. Yeah,
yeah, it had the mirrors on the ceiling. It was kind of seedy. It didn't look overly ornate like the like some of the other ones that they stay in. Not too much extra stuff that makes it...
They didn't try too hard.
I didn't think
they
should.
Yeah, they did not.
They run
good
into
job, set designer.
Absolutely.
Good job.
They run into another hunter, Richie, and his sister, Cheryl.
So Richie really was a hunter. I was confused because when the, I guess we're skipping ahead here, but when the demon like killed him or whatever, I was like, oh wait, he actually, I don't, like I was, like I thought maybe he didn't know what he was doing because like she took him out pretty easy.
I'm pretty clear just from the way Dean talked, I suspect that the way Dean talked about him was not too far from the truth. Dean was talking about how you don't really know what you're doing and you're going to get yourself killed. And I think Dean was accurate on that. I think he really didn't much know what he was doing and ended up getting himself killed.
Right.
So a hunter, but only just. Only just in name only, maybe. Almost.
Okay, yeah, because he didn't really seem to know what was going on at all. I guess I just assume that all the hunters are kind of trained, but
right.
I guess as we're seeing, no.
They ain't all pros, apparently.
Yeah.
But Dean and Richie worked together on a succubus when Sam was still in school. They compare notes, and Richie really hasn't found out any more than they have on topics other than Cheryl. They come up with a theory that the demons might have been joyriding in the victims' bodies, and they try to get Richie to think of others in town who were nice in the past but recently changed. Richie says maybe Mr. Trotter, previously a model citizen and president of the Rotary Club, who owns most of town and has brought in the gambling and prostitution. So they decide to go to Trotter's Bar. And contrary to Sam's earlier research, they find the town is actually jumping, not just a quiet little former factory town. Dean's raring to go to research? One of those.
I don't know.
They find Richie at Trotter's. After gushing over the quality of his silk shirt, he points out Trotter. Don S. Davis, Major Briggs from Twin Peaks.
Oh, God, I couldn't make it through Twin Peaks. I know that I'm, like, alone in that, but I hated that show.
After the first bits, there was a lot to wade through before you got to the last good bits. And
when I was young, I looked just like Laura Palmer.
Yes, you did.
Oh, I can see that.
She's not my cousin, but doesn't she look exactly like Laura Palmer?
Mm-hmm.
That's a quote. Sorry, that's a shoehorned quote from the dream sequence.
Yeah.
All right. So Don S. Davis, but Richie says that you can't get near him right now. So Dean's ready to check out the hot bartender, but apparently Richie says he's up to bat first on that one, because they are they're that way. They're dudes. They're bros.
Dudes.
Lads in the another country. Dean ponders on bits of her anatomy and 5 cent currency when he is interrupted by the father, the priest again. I'm not stealing anyone's quotes. I don't know if there are any quotes.
I have no quotes, and neither does
no
Ed.
Quotes.
The father says that she owes him a confession, and she points out that the clergy drinks for free. And though she denies that the confession is likely, he says he'd better see her butt in church on Sunday. Nickel or no.
I found that super weird.
Yeah?
Like, that scene was real uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, drinking priest is kind of a cliche to some extent.
Well, yeah, but isn't he supposed to have sherry?
I don't know. I don't think you're supposed to be knocking back shots at the bar. But this is a town that's sort of given over to vice now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in like elementary school, like our like school priest or whatever was like notorious for like hanging out at the neighborhood bar that was like on the corner. Like everybody knows he would be there. Like if you were ever like looking for him, you could
check the bar.
Yeah, he was always there. But, like, they also had, like, food. And, I mean, of course, he was, like, an old drunk. But, like, I think he was just, like, chilling and, like, eating, you know, like, fried mushrooms or something. But
yeah,
it's not implausible that there'd be a priest at the bar. But, like, the whole priest at the bar, like, flirting with the bartender.
Talking about the bartender's ass to other guys that he's just met.
Yeah.
That's a little odd.
It was weird.
So, yeah, I think Darcy was already keying in. This priest doesn't seem quite right.
Well, I said that immediately in the church. I said that. I
oh,
can't
really?
Remember what it was about him that made me think that, but there was something.
Probably because you were watching Supernatural and you figured someone had to be creepy.
You seem... there must have been... No, it was like a shot where they're like, dun-dun-dun, he's the bad guy.
Well, yeah, they did have her startled by him being there, and then he suddenly emerged and it was like, oh, it's just the priest.
Right.
Dean alters his drinking habits in the spirit of investigation. You drink hurricanes now.
I do know.
Yeah, I got that wrong. Oh, well. When Sam spots a man with a gun, and while they're unable to prevent the murder half, they prevent a murder-suicide. By preventing the suicide half. But holy water shows him to be free of demon, and he reveals the victim had slept with his wife. It appears that he had gotten drunk and sought revenge. But then they notice that Richie has gone. Richie and the bartender are at her parents' place. Yeah. She takes him to the wine cellar. He says, wouldn't you rather go back to my hotel where I've got oils? And she says, but I got toys. And Richie is apparently
toys,
up for that.
She means...
I'm going to snap your neck, apparently, because there weren't really any toys.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't see any toys. Yeah.
No toys like, there, other than
no
her...
No trains, or vicious. Balls, or anything fun.
No balls.
No balls.
You saw no balls.
I saw no balls.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry.
I don't know what to say to that.
You don't have to say anything. Sometimes
there were no balls that went anywhere. No balls
no
into
balls.
Anything.
No balls.
Or out of anything. All right.
Meow.
I just heard that kitty.
She's really trying to get all up in the podcast here, aren't you, baby? Yeah. Nobody loves you. Everybody hates you, huh? Yeah.
She reveals herself as a demon and says that she knows that he's a hunter, and though he goes on the attack, she quickly snaps his neck.
Yeah, I was grateful for that.
Yeah, I didn't like him. He was smarmy.
Yeah, he was super smarmy. I was like, yeah, he can go. That's good.
Don't need him recurring.
Yeah.
Dean heads out to look for Richie, and Sam says that he's going to follow after Trotter. Bobby is getting the cult sighted in when Ruby shows up and reveals herself as a demon. She says that the cult, while firing again, won't affect a demon and offers herself as a target, so Bobby shoots her, with no effect, really.
I did like the look on her face. Like she looked super shocked that he did it.
Yeah, when she goaded him, I think she still didn't really expect him to pull the trigger.
Mm-mm. Yeah, she totally didn't expect that. So I was grateful that, you know, she looked upset about it at least.
Then she offers to help him with the gun. And a whole bunch of stuff happens off screen. Bobby either now knows exactly what the secrets are or at least has somebody who can help him make the bullets or whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know really what's going on here.
Sam has found Trotter's office and calls Dean to meet him at the bar. Dean gets a come-on based on his previous heroism the previous night, but it turns out to be a sales pitch, half off for services, which he declines. Then, after a quick chat-up of the bartender, they're off. It's business time. Back at Trotter's office, business hours are apparently over, because Trotter and his heavy are departing. Sam goes in to investigate, but Trotter and the heavy return. When Sam gets the upper hand, Trotter holds Sam at gunpoint. But after Sam splashes holy water on them, he realizes there's nothing demonic about them, and he's forced to make an embarrassed retreat. That was just a little weird. It didn't work for me.
It didn't work for me either. I was just like, okay. Because at this point, when they definitely call the police or whatever, and then they would find Sam's prints on the gun, and he's already in the system, and like, there's no way.
Well, maybe they're going to use that.
Yeah, maybe.
I hope so.
We can get back
I guess
to that.
We're right.
We could get
Next
back
episode.
To that.
Next episode.
Dean and Casey arrive at the wine cellar, and Dean says that he happened to drop by the cellar a little earlier after he followed his friend Richie's GPS tracker and gave Richie a proper burial. Casey charges at him but hits an invisible wall, and Dean reveals the devil's trap under the rug.
How long do you think it takes to dig a big hole and give a proper burial?
Well, maybe he just said he was going to give him a proper burial. Maybe he's only going to give him a proper burial.
He said he already did it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's not doing it the proper 6 feet, and he's just, you know, a shallow grave with the proper consecration is still a grave, right?
I suppose.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But how can... Never mind. Let it go. Sometimes it's best that way.
Just
yeah.
let it go.
Although I don't really know where the timeline happened where Dean had time to discover Richie's body... bury him, make a devil's trap and everything, but didn't have the time to say, hey, Sam, I know exactly where she's going to be and where I'm taking her, where she's going to be with me later on if I need help. He had lots of time to do all of that, but no time to tell Sam about it.
Wait. The doctor brought his TARDIS.
No, just kidding. No, that would make it too easy for there to be more time. We're talking about how he had lots of time to contact Sam, but didn't.
This episode, it felt like a lot of it was filler. Definitely, like, the whole part where Sam has to find him is just filler. Like, there's no reason for him to go to, like, her apartment and then come back and talk to the bartender and, like...
And when I was making the notes, I was like, okay, that's got to be most of the episode, and we're only halfway through right now. And I was like, this has got to be just about done when I was making the notes. And there wasn't, that was not just about done because there's still half of the episode for talking.
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 Just talking and then like going from one place to the next. It's just, anyway.
Anyways.
This is a hard one. This is a really hard one to watch.
We'll get down to the ratings soon enough.
Oof.
Not a good
one. He pulls out a book to exercise her, but she calls upon the elements, destroying his book with wind and then caving the entrances into the cellar. After trying it from memory, he says that someone will arrive with a better memory. And then she says that Sam is better known already as the brains of their operation, revealing she knows all about the Winchesters. She also reveals she has a partner who might find them before Sam can. And Sam, meanwhile, is sparing no expense, bribing the other bartender for Casey's address. Casey and Dean talk a lot. Casey says she talked Trotter into bringing the vice business into town, and the humans did the rest. Meanwhile, Sam finds Casey's apartment empty. Casey and Dean discuss the nature of God and demons. Sam calls up Bobby, leaves a message, meets with.
I want to talk about that scene just for like a second. I feel like that is a hard scene, like for many reasons, like the gods and demons and Lucifer and the mythology of this show is so muddled. Like, I don't get it even the tiniest bit. Like,
no, they're like making it up as they go along.
Well, I think they're pulling in new elements now because I mean they're finally naming Yellow Eyes, and you know, people who already know what Azazel is will now, if they hadn't already been spoiled on it, work through that stuff.
Is that what they're trying to do?
What's
fine
that?
Tune it.
Yeah, maybe they're fine-tuning it a little, or maybe they're just moving it into the next stage of operation. I mean, they've got a new season, and they've got some new conflicts, but they're really sort of trying to bring up. I think they're just trying.
Let's pretend that we don't know anything about like God or hell or whatever. Like in our own like real world scenario, or like our like the normal Judeo-Christian mythology, what we have here is like a group of demons that Lucifer apparently made. Or he made them the way that they are. So, like, maybe they were people or maybe there was something else. But anyway, so they're now these demon creatures. They're from hell, but they apparently hate being in hell because she says how it's, like, a place of despair or whatever.
It's a bit of despair. But
uncomfortable.
But they're still, like, super into Lucifer for some reason. Like, wouldn't you be mad at this guy that, like, keeps you in this, like, pit of despair?
Well, he's not keeping him there right now. He'll be back someday, and then the whole thing will turn out the way they want it to.
So Lucifer's not in hell?
Apparently.
So, like, then who's, like, the boss? Who's the boss of hell?
Yeah, we'll work through this. Sam meets up with the father again, just says, hi, we need to talk. Casey brings up Lucifer, her own god, a.k.a. the devil, human's word, not theirs, who nobody has seen, but who shall return, and they have faith that he will.
So that could all just be like not even real at all, I guess. Like there could be no Lucifer. This could just be like a mythology.
She could be lying.
It could be, or it could be that Lucifer is going to return. Gosh.
Well, where's he been if he's not in hell? Like, unless there's like all these different realms of existence or whatever, or I guess Lucifer could be on Earth.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe Sam's Lucifer. Oh, I don't know.
I know that I'm overthinking this show, but like it really, it's so hard for me to watch it. I'm just like, what are they going for here?
I hear you. Oh, I hear you. It's frustrating, isn't it?
It's so frustrating because like her being like, oh God, well, I love Lucifer. I'm not sure if Lucifer exists. I'm from hell. Hell's a really awful place. I love being here on Earth. I mean, it seems like you would just be like, well, screw this Lucifer dude. I'm just going to, like, love being on Earth and just chill. You know, like, why do any... Like, just live a normal life on Earth if you like it here
so
much.
Buy a lake house.
Well, she's trying...
Yeah.
Potato chips.
She is trying to set up a parallel between human believers and God and devil... You know, these demon believers in Lucifer haven't seen him. Believe that he exists, have faith he's coming back. That sounds kind of, I mean, if you don't put the devil into it, it's haven't seen him.
Sounds very familiar.
Believe that he exists.
Another
think he's
story
coming back.
You've heard, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So she's setting up that parallel at least, whether it's accurate or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got that she was trying to make it like a you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people see Earth as like this like horrible, like horrific place as well, you know, and we're like, well, why are we even here? Like, why do we keep trying? But maybe not. Like, maybe these philosophical questions are like not something that this show's even trying to tackle, and I'm just doing this on my own.
Yeah, no, I think she means to be tackling that with Dean, and
not
maybe
only tackling it, like slapping you in the face with it. It was
I don't think we're reading too much into this. I think this is all really right there on the surface.
Yeah, I mean, that's where she was going with it, and it's I don't know, it was a little heavy.
I'm not sure if she was trying to is she trying to inspire doubt in Dean, or is she trying to what's her goal in making talking about this stuff?
Or she's just passing time because she's
stalling for her partner to show up.
She's just stuck.
Yeah, I guess I feel like also then, like, okay, if that is what she's saying, and then we have to, like, think more, like, in a broad term, like, what is the writer then saying to the audience? Like, am I supposed to be taking something away from this? Because as it stands, I'm not. And I don't know if anybody is.
I feel like there is some setup happening that we can't see what exactly is being told yet.
Right.
I think there is a little. I think that of all of this discussion between Dean and Casey, there has to be something that is foreshadowing or addressing things that will happen in the future. I don't think that they can go through that many minutes of talking without having a point at all for the season or series as a whole.
Right.
Yeah. I guess I'm expecting it to be like almost like a thesis statement or something for the show. Like, at some point we must get like, what is this show about? Like, what am I taking away from this? And right now it's just kind of like, oh, it's just about like people fighting demons, except that it's like also talking about like God and like the nature of like, you know, humanity. And I guess what I'm saying, like, when they're tackling these big issues, like, I'm not sure this show's smart enough to tackle anything bigger.
Exactly.
Right?
That might be a big concern.
That could be a big concern, and I kind of don't know where they're going with this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, so.
So, Dean checks in on what hell is like, and let's face it, it ain't good.
All right.
I summarized that quick.
Hit O despair.
Sam reluctantly accepts the priest's help in finding Dean and Casey. And if we hadn't already guessed it, we see that the priest is actually the demon partner.
Oh, no.
I know that you said that you had guessed it.
Yeah.
You had turned to me and said, the priest is the other guy, isn't he, at some point.
It was like right at the beginning of the church.
No. At some point when we heard there was a second one, you worked through and said, it's the priest, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I said, maybe.
I thought the priests were in on it. Like, whenever Sam was, like, throwing the holy water at their faces or whatever, I definitely was like, oh, the whole church is in on this.
Oh, but make sense. Other than the nun wasn't. She was legitimately terrified.
Yeah, she did not look pleased.
No.
Dean and Casey talk about Dean's crossroad deal, and he insists that he's unafraid. That's pretty much that. That's one sentence for an entire chunk of scene.
Mm-hmm.
The priest seems to almost be trying to talk Sam into embracing the leadership destiny. Not saying it outright, but talking up Sam's intelligence, seeing him in front of the pack, doing great things. And I gotta think, if she knows who the Winchesters are, then he does too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this kind of has me wondering, you know, I mean, she said she was ready to follow him. It almost sounds like the priest is, you know, obviously he doesn't think that Sam knows who he is. But he's almost talking as though it was like, don't you think you should be in a leadership role somewhere, maybe in front of our gang of demons? But then after that, you know, Sam says he's happy doing what he's doing, and the priest calls Sam his brother's keeper.
Yeah.
Now, we know who said he wasn't his brother's keeper and what happened in that whole situation. Is there foreshadowing something here?
Probably.
That's biblical, right?
That's biblical. Like Cain and Abel, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cain, after murdering Abel, said, I'm not my brother's keeper.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, are we foreshadowing something here?
I don't know.
Is the part of Sam that isn't fully human going to turn on him?
Is Dean still, like, obligated to kill him?
I don't know who's killing who here. I mean, there seemed to be a foreshadowing that Sam's going to do something to Dean.
If Dean has to go to hell, does that make him a demon?
No, it means he's a soul that's tormented in hell.
Oh, okay. But maybe he could, like, you know, do some community service and be a demon. So, I don't know. I don't know how.
Isn't it crazy that not even the demons are having fun in hell? Like, I thought the demons would at least be like living it up down there, like torturing people.
Yeah, I thought they were enjoying some tormenting. They got to do the torturing and the the pillaging and all.
I'm a little bummed out that the demons don't like it there either.
Yeah, they're like, my job sucks.
Somebody oughta.
Right.
Maybe if Lucifer comes back and sets things right.
Have to poke this guy with a pitchfork all day.
Lucifer's gonna come and get the demons' local union back in shape.
Screaming and they're screaming.
Where's Lucifer been? I think Lucifer and God are just like playing chess or something.
I know, they're on sabbatical.
Chilling out.
So Dean asks and sort of puzzles over what the post Devil's Gate plan was. Casey uses Azazel's name. Says that he had a plan, but it fell apart when Dean killed Azazel.
Is this the first time we're actually learning Azazel's name?
This
I know
it is.
Yeah, this is the first time on the show.
Because we had this discussion with you, and you know the wife.
Yeah,
I knew we knew who Azazel's name, but I didn't think the show had told us yet.
Yes, this is the first reveal of it. And doesn't ring a bell for Dean, apparently.
He's like,
who? Who? Azazel? What? And that was the other thing that kind of bothered me, was that, you know, she revealed this somewhat, what I feel, I mean, and maybe you're not, maybe this is all on purpose, but I feel like it's a fairly meaty chunk of information that he could have brought back to Bobby and didn't mention.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, by the way, Yellow Eyes had a name. Here's who he actually was. What do you know about this?
Well, maybe they just didn't get around to that yet.
Yeah, I know.
Next episode, he'll be like, oh, P.S.
By the way,
Azazel.
What does that mean to you? Ring a bell? Don't know. Sam was supposed to lead, and without the leadership, it's chaos and factions jockeying for power, which is kind of what I said a little while back when we were talking about what's Ruby's angle. Right. And I said it's, you know, probably some kind of fact, you know, other faction of demons that doesn't necessarily believe what the plan was or whatever.
I don't know. I still don't. I don't trust her.
I mean, either that or she's trying to seduce him into being part of the plan.
Maybe that's what, something's up.
And she even says that Sam is a target to many of them. So again, there's my other thought that he's he's a target. Maybe she's just gaining trust. I mean, apparently she could probably just reach over and snap his neck when he's not looking.
Maybe.
But maybe she's got other plans, a target in some other way.
Oh, I wish she would.
When Sam and the Padre roll up in the priest Swanky's classic station wagon, Dean works out that the father might be the partner, and when Sam is ready with the holy water, suddenly a shot from Bobby narrowly misses the priest, who mentally flings Bobby and Sam aside. Bobby gives Sam the Colt, and Ruby urges him on. The priest digs into the cellar, flings Dean aside, breaks the seal, and reunites with Casey. Against Casey's protest, the priest begins to throttle Dean, but Sam successfully shoots the priest. And against Dean's protests, Sam kills Casey too. All right, just a little ways to go here. Dean checks in with Bobby, whether their mission is futile or not, but also about how Sam killed Casey and was cold about it, and Azazel's comment about Sam coming back different, which Bobby dismisses as demon lies. And again, I say Azazel there, but he did call him Yellow Eyes in front of Bobby.
Right.
Ruby,
you should tell Bobby his name.
Yes.
We can all agree.
Yes. Ruby congratulates Sam on demon kills, but Sam points out the human deaths involved as well. She points out that she's going to help that she's eventually going to help Dean, and mentions there's a quid pro quo. But before she elaborates on the quid pro quo, he asks why she is on his side. I have a feeling she was going to say, "Here's what you're going to do for me," and he doesn't let her do it. She says that she can take the Colt and find another ally. And after Sam considers using it on her, seemed like a good idea to me. I was kind of rooting for it. She points out what has to be done won't all be without collateral damage, and he says he doesn't have to like it. The point she concedes, it says she'll be there with him, and I don't think he looks like he's all that happy about that either. And was she just being creative when she said, I'll be there, a little fallen angel on your shoulder, or are a lot of these fallen angels? Are all of the demons fallen angels, or some of them? Because we know Azazel is.
Sure.
And Lucifer.
Right.
So, beyond that...
But then it doesn't make sense that the other girl was like, Lucifer made us what we are. Because then if you're just fallen angels, then God made you what you are.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Or God made them, and then Lucifer made them what they are.
I can't think that hard.
Okay. Sorry. That is the end of the episode.
That makes my brain hurt.
All right. Woo! We made it!
Dun, da, da, da. It's a record! have no idea how long it was, but it was not very long.
Hey, who won, Sam versus Dean? I didn't even really consider this yet.
I think Dean, because he was clever with the devil's trap.
Yeah, he held her there for eventually Bobby to come in and slip Sam the colt.
Yep.
Yeah, sure, I'm good with that.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah, Dean. All right, Dean. There we go.
Woo-hoo.
All right, I put down a couple of quotes with Casey referencing Dick Cheney and Dean saying, "He one of yours?" She says, "Not yet, but let's just say he's got a parking lot reserved for him downstairs."
Does that mean that people can become demons?
I think it's just, again, I think it's, you know, the tormented souls and the demons are two separate groups.
Okay.
But
so then how's Dick Cheney going to become a demon?
Well, he's not. He's got a parking spot reserved for him, meaning that they're going to park his soul down there to be tormented.
They're already.
Oh, I thought it meant like he was getting a nice car in hell.
No,
all right.
I don't. Yeah,
never mind.
I thought that too.
Okay, I'm not the only. I imagine him driving like one of those like souped up like rockabilly cars with the flames on the sides.
Oh yeah, totally would work for him.
And then I just put this quote down just because it was kind of a stretch. Casey says, "Why don't you relax?" And Dean says, "Why don't you kiss my ass?" And she says, "Why, Dean, you're a poet. I had no idea. Relax and ass don't rhyme, man." Okay, sorry. I know that was a stretch.
That's bad, yeah.
Well, I know we're speeding through this and all, but are we ready to work on our ratings?
Oh, I'm so ready.
I've got a good one.
All right.
You ready?
You want me to start? I think I've got the longest rating.
Paul, you go first.
All right. All right. Well, I thought it was really expository, a lot of talk, less action. Getting the cult back up and running, you know, all of the important, gigantic importance of the cult the first season, and now it was kind of like a, oh, hey, by the way, here it is. And they used it. So that seemed a little anticlimactic. And some of the discussing the politics of hell felt like discussing politics.
Yep.
In hell.
Yep.
So, the pluses I used, I thought that Don S. Davis was fun to see, although he was really underused in it. The cult being back is good, even if it was a little anticlimactic. Liked getting the Azazel name check and getting Lucifer reference that expands on things a little bit. I thought there was some really, you know, if it's actually foreshadowing, I thought they did a good job putting in some foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going to tell me one of those was going to be
your... Well, you stole mine.
Well, no, there's three. That's yours?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll do one of the other... You're saying the one on top is yours?
Yeah, kind of. It's very similar.
All right, well, we'll go with that. All right, so, anyways, my rating is 4.5 out of 10 pig slippers. Because he stepped on a squeaky pig slipper.
Squeak.
All right. All right, that little pig was cute. Darcy, please.
Oh, my God. It was like torture.
You were the one in hell.
I felt like I was in hell. Yeah, I really... I will say they tried to move it along. It was clumsy. It was boring. It was clumsy. I don't know. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10 mirrored ceilings.
All right. Well, y'all were both more generous than me. So I thought this episode was really dumb. It made me think too hard just because I was like, the mythology of this show is ridiculous. It makes no sense. It's just stupid. So... I'm going to give it 1.5 pits of despair.
Oh!
Which gives episode a 3.
Well, so, you know, we're going to wait pending John's rating. I bet it ends up getting at least up to a 4.
Maybe. Maybe.
If it is a 3, then it's tied for lowest rated ever. Wow. Right there with Bugs.
Bugs.
It was pretty sucky.
It was pretty awful. And it wasn't even like... fun. Like, it was just like...
I'm really glad you watched it, though. Thank you for...
I have a suspicion. I have the suspicion that this has a whole lot of setup. It's not very well done as a setup episode. I think other episodes of other TV series that have setup have a little bit better Monster of the Week involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This felt like a really average Monster of the Week and a bunch of setup.
Not even average.
Well, you know, yeah, average.
Poor.
No, average. They have a demon. They're fighting a demon.
It
average.
Wasn't average. It was below average.
Yeah.
Lame.
It was the huge.
I called it.
Yeah.
The first.
But so anyway, with my thought that it might be a bunch of setup, it might end up because it sets up something cool, be it higher in someone's eyes who's seen the whole series.
All right, well.
So we'll see.
Well. I mean, I'm going to be highly impressed if they are able to actually bring all of their thoughts together at any point.
Yeah.
I doubt it, but I will be impressed if they can do it.
Well, they're going to have to, I don't know, they're going to have a think tank because holy hell, what a mess.
Yeah. Well, I think we got another 72 seasons to really, you know, find out.
Yeah. Well, if John has a file for us relating to this episode, I'll put it in right here.
Hey, everyone. I'm sorry I couldn't be there this week to record. I've been dealing with depression and stress, and it tends to leave me fatigued, and I sleep a lot. So it just wasn't feasible for me to record this week. But I did want to leave some sort of feedback for the episode this week, and I wish I could have been there because it looks like I'm in the minority on this episode. I enjoyed this one. I didn't love it, but there are elements of it that I really enjoy. For one, the scenes between Dean and the demon in the basement are just tailored to me and the things that I like. I like minimalist stories. You know, it's kind of a bottle episode. Like, I like it when you can just take as few characters as possible, put them in as few settings as possible, and just have them interact and have them talk. And so I like the dynamic between those two characters sort of coming from different sides of an argument and also reaching a bit of an understanding, because by the end of it, neither one of them really wanted the other one to die. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I like that we're getting into what this means with these seven deadly sins being manifested. And I think that's really going to be interesting with season three moving forward. I'm not crazy about a lot of the scenes surrounding these scenes between Dean and this demon. I have nothing against them. I can just take them or leave them. I don't think they're anything special. But overall, I enjoyed just sort of stepping away from the action and just having a conversation about what's going on and where a few people stand on the issues that we're dealing with this season. So overall, I enjoyed this episode. So I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 talking to death. I guess that's a rating. I don't know. Anyway, again, I'm sorry I couldn't be there this week, but I promise I will be front and center for the next episode next week. So until then, take care. Bye.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
I don't agree at all. Actually, I completely agree with that. Good, yeah.
There you go.
Sure, what John said.
Hey, John, what's our homework for next week? Well, Paul, I don't have an impression. Yeah, the homework for next week is Bedtime Stories, Season 3, Episode 5, and our guest will be Heidi.
Yay. Oh my God, that is my favorite Madonna album. So I can only hope. Fingers crossed for good stuff.
At least one reference.
Oh, gotta be.
So we'll see you all next time. And on behalf of all the rest of my hosts here who have not yet fallen asleep, even discussing this pit of despair.
Pit of despair.
Happy hunting.
Bye, y'all. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the IdgitCast from QuadrupleZ.com. Visit our Facebook group at facebook.com/IdgitCast. Email us at IdgitCastPodcast@gmail.com. Please use the episode title in the subject line. You can call our voicemail line, 206-309-9389. Please name the episode early in your message. The theme song for the IdgitCast was written and performed for the show by Borrowed Trouble, and the vocalist is Allie Jones. Find the band at borrowedtrouble.com. The closing music you are hearing right now is Too Good, written and performed by Jack Mangan and is used by permission. Find more music by Jack, as well as humor, fiction, discussion, and a variety of other goings-on at jackmangan.com, home of the Deadpan Podcast. Would you like to hear more from the hosts of the show? You can find John Pavlich on CastleCast, also from QuadrupleZ.com, and his own Sofa Dogs podcast at sofadogs.libsyn.com. Yvette can also be heard on Investigating Mars, also at QuadrupleZ.com. Get in touch with Darcy for apparel design needs at Facebook.com. Search for Cyan Fey Designs, C-Y-A-N-F-E-Y Designs. And you can also hear Darcy and I on the Ghostlight podcast, an introcast for the television series Slings and Arrows at QuadrupleZ.com.
Hey, yeah, they also had the Supernatural convention here over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Someone got mugged, and I found out that he's a member of the cast.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I was not paying attention to coverage of the convention other than suddenly there's news that isn't related directly to the convention. Hey, this guy, who I'd actually never heard of and I still don't know what he looks like, is a member of the Supernatural cast, and he got mugged.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, awful. I'm sorry.
It's like Spoilers Channel 4.
Yeah. Told you guys know what we're doing here? I don't know.
Poor guy. I hope he's all right.
I'm sure. He said it was just a couple scratches, and he didn't hold it against the city.
Well, that's good.
But